Welcome, everybody, to the Locked On Lakers podcast. I'm Anthony Irwin, and I'm joined by Matt Moore, and I'm going to get to that conversation here in a bit. The way this is going to work, so basically, Matt and I talked for 50 minutes just a second ago, and as it was going along, usually I keep these shows to 30 minutes tops, and as we were going along, it was just such a fun and fascinating conversation that I didn't really want it to stop. So what I'm going to do is I split the conversation into two parts, and it's a very actually natural division between the two shows. In segment one, or in part one, we get into all kinds of stuff and why, you know, we don't know stuff about the Lakers, and that's kind of how that's going to go. And in segment two, we're going to get into some of why we think it's going to work out. So that's going to air tomorrow on Tuesday. So it's a really fun conversation. So again, without further ado, let's throw to my conversation with Matt, who is now a friend of the show. How about that?
I think it's one of those things where, like, I'm a friend of you. And so I'm a friend of your show, but if, like, the listeners have any hold of this, then I'm definitely, like, the enemy of the show. So I'm the frenemy of the show, I think is the best way to describe it.
There you go. I'll take it. How are you ready? We're recording this Sunday night. The NBA season kicks off Tuesday night. Are you rested? Are you ready to go for this season?
I'm so psyched. I'm thrilled. We're going to have it sounds nerdy, but it's not. Like, it's not even like a nerd thing. It's just like, look, when I was growing up, I grew up in the 90s, and like League Pass didn't exist, and there wasn't an NBA team within range of my local stations. I didn't have a team to watch because I grew up in Northwest Arkansas. Like, I was following the NBA through box scores. Like, I was reading the physical paper back mm-hmm. when that was a thing that happened. And I was reading the box scores. Like, I still get excited seeing a box score and seeing who did what. But better than that, like, there are all these questions to answer. There's all these interesting teams. There's so many things that we don't know. I'm really excited to start getting answers about it and to start the long, arduous trek of the NBA season. I'm excited for all those random nights on League Pass. I'm ready for it. Let's go.
So the way I can't think of very many seasons that I've been this excited for, not just because the Lakers got LeBron, but there are so many storylines throughout the league that, like the Warriors, for example, history tells us that right now this season is the one where the dynasty kind of trips up a little bit because it's really hard to get back to the finals as often as they have, and you know, not very many teams three-peat. And you have the Kevin Durant might leave thing. And then you have in Boston, you have them getting so many guys back that there's a legitimate sector of people wondering, do they have too many good players? Is that even a thing? It's just really exciting. And you know, obviously, from where I'm sitting, the Lakers have LeBron. So that's kind of fun. Today, what we're going to talk about is the Lakers. And I think what frustrates people like you, Matt, and like me, is that there are things that we don't know, and there's so much that we don't know that we're just it's hard not to just throw our hands up and say, well, we'll just see when we get there.
Yeah, and I think I was talking about this today on Twitter, which is why you invited me or yesterday, is that the Lakers are so polarizing. They're such a discussion point, and mm-hmm. I feel like for Lakers fans, I kind of need to explain where the media actually is on the Lakers. Because there are wide discrepancies in how people feel about it. The general thing I would tell you is that the national media in general wants the Lakers to be good. Mm-hmm. If you want direct quotes from that, like Andrew Sharp said on his podcast on SI.com, I want the Lakers to be good. There is a draw because most of the biggest known writers, those are people that are a little bit older, and they're in their late 30s and 40s. Those people were doing their coming up through the ranks when the Lakers were winning championships, either in the early 2000s or in the late 2000s. Not only that, though, there is such a history with that team. It feels more important when the Lakers are good. Talking about the Lakers feels more important than talking about the Cavs or talking about the Mavericks or talking about the Spurs or talking about anybody else. It feels more important. So there is, I would tell you that there is a general sense of there's a positivity and a want for those Lakers to be good. Now, what winds up happening is you have generally a pretty soft local media in LA. Like, it's just not New York where you're going to get torn to pieces. Like, it's fine. It's not like there's really good journalism that goes on. Like, there's good reporting that goes on every single year. Like, there's a history of great reporting in Los Angeles. A lot of the people that have come through Los Angeles covering the Lakers as a beat have gone on to do incredible things. Like, Howard Beck is an example of that, right? But in general, the attitude in LA is just not the same as it is in New York, where it's like, why aren't you winning? What's wrong with you? Why are you a disaster? Like, it's just not the same kind of, you know, Philadelphia, same kind of deal. It's very much a California, like LA kind of thing, where it's just like, it's more chill. So you don't really have like the kind of antagonistic nature of it. But what you do have then is Lakers get LeBron, all of his positivity, and immediately, like, because you and I have talked about, we went on this podcast in the summer and we talked about the rest of the roster and the things that confused you and how you don't know about some of these signings and all of this stuff. Because I keep thinking, if you took this team and you remove LeBron and you put them in Charlotte, what's the perception versus what we were talking about with this Lakers team? And you could say, but LeBron, and I get you on that. I'm with you on the idea that LeBron makes these specific players better. I get that. But there is a definite bump. The other problem, however, is that there's also this caustic reversal too, where you have enough people that are annoyed at the general sense of everyone talking about how the Lakers are going to be good. So they stake out the position on the contrarian side, which is like, no, the Lakers are actually going to be trash. Or like people start to look at it and they just push a little bit further with their opinion. Like, Tim Bontemps genuinely believes the Lakers are going to miss the playoffs. He wouldn't have written it if he didn't. Like, Tim Bontemps is a solid reporter. That guy does not have to write clickbait headlines in order to generate traffic. That's not what his job is. Like, for anybody that thinks that, like, you need to first look at the outlet and what their job is. You will be able to easily identify the people that are writing things in order to generate headlines and saying things in order to generate headlines and people that aren't. If you look at the actual work that they do and do a study of it or ask around, you will find that out. However, there is kind of like a sense of like, man, I'm so down on the Lakers, I might go the other way. And you start talking yourself into the opposite. The Lakers are so widely discussed because this team is so just guano insane in terms of its roster construction. Like, their third best player is an off-ball point guard who can't shoot, who's best as an off-ball creator. That's weird. It's just like a second-year defensive stalwart who's best as an off-ball playmaker who can't shoot. Like, that's crazy. like, their just general roster construction is nutso. And so there's all this conversation about it. And what winds up happening is we have so much noise in the air about this team. I do not have a sense for it. Like, I've been talking about this for a long time that I can't take the over or the under. Like, right now I'm currently on the under on their over under, but I've got them as the second least team I have confidence in. I did a ranking of how much confidence I have in whichever side I land on, the over, the under for the win totals. Number 30 was Houston. That was the one I had the least confidence in because their number is just a death trap with the changes that came to their organization this summer. And then 29 is a Los Angeles Lakers, because I look at that roster and I go, God, there are so many weaknesses on this team, but they have LeBron. And I go, okay, yeah, but and the young guys really are good. Like, they are, you know, Zach Lowe was saying this on his podcast that, like, how long is it going to take to realize how many of the young guys just have to play heavy minutes and that's the best way to win? The problem is, I also look at it and I don't know how many all-star caliber players they have. Like, I know after the Ingram really good preseason game, you had a podcast on that was like, Brandon Ingram, superstar?
Oh, and like, this is, you know me. Like, you know.
I know. But my point is, like, this is how it kind of goes, is everybody after that preseason game was like, ah, oh, Ingram's going to be a stud this year. And part of what I've started to realize is the Lakers, there's such a wide range of how players can end up being good. Like, Michael Kidd-Gilchrist is a good player. People will argue that point, but it is is true. He gets rebounds. He plays good defense. He's athletic. He can cut to the rim. And I think Ingram has the capacity to be much better than what Michael Kidd-Gilchrist has been. Mm-hmm. But the difference is, like, there's still a huge gap between where Michael Kidd-Gilchrist is and an all-star. Mm-hmm. And so trying to figure out where that lands is really maddening. I don't have a way to be able to slice through the conversation. And part of it, I will admit, is I wind up being like, I spend a lot of time on Twitter. That's not exactly a secret. And so what winds up happening is I have to watch so many of my opinions, because if you not even say negative, if you show I'm not certain of a positive. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of pushback. Like, yeah. There's just a lot of pushback from even like, no, you need to be confident that they're going to be good at this or good in these areas or whatever it is. Like, spacing is something that in the preseason, I think we're seeing probably going to be more of an issue than maybe people had hoped. There was an idea that spacing was not going to be a problem. Their 3-point rate was devastatingly low. That's mm-hmm. an issue. Like, that's an issue no matter what. And that's going to impact your spacing. If you're not taking threes, you can space the floor and not take threes. That's possible. However, it's going to be an issue if you're not, because eventually teams are going to start adjusting how they defend you, and that's going to be a problem. So there's all of these things, and the atmosphere of noise around this team makes it extremely difficult to get any sort of real sense of how to project them.
Yeah, we got to take a break here, and we'll come back. And I want to get to a couple of the points that you raised, especially regarding the response to it, because I've noticed the same kind of thing in my own mentions. So let's just take a quick second here, and when we come back, we'll touch on a lot of the stuff that you raised. Today's show is brought to you in part by Vivid Seats. Head on over to vividseats.com/app, and that's where you're going to find a very easy way to buy tickets. That's the biggest thing that they stress, is they want it to be as easy as possible to purchase your tickets, to find the right deal, to find the right section, all of those good things. And look, at the end of the day, if you're a sports fan, it's all about creating memories. We are just about a week away from the Lakers' home opener, in which LeBron James will suit up with the Los Angeles Lakers for the first time officially. No preseason. He'll play both halves. He'll play full bore, full LeBron mode to beat the Houston Rockets. It's going to be a great game, and you're going to want to be there. So head on over to vividseats.com/app. Use the promo code LOCKEDON for $20 off your first purchase of $200 or more. Parking around Staples Center is not great, right? And that's an extra $20 that you get to use on that, a beer, whatever. So again, that's vividseats.com/app. Use promo code LOCKEDONLAKERS and make those memories. So first and foremost, I think if the Lakers had gotten LeBron, and the 5 years that led to that weren't so far and away the worst stretch of Lakers basketball, that I think the responses to anything that's even perceived as a slight would be a little less drastic. Like, the Lakers have been so bad that now the Laker fans don't want to hear about any kind of possible negative. We know that there's a possibility that Ingram and LeBron don't really fit. Like, we've already started to see it, frankly. Like, even in those really good games that Ingram has played, he has done a lot of his damage while LeBron was on the court. Pete and I talked about this. His true shooting percentage is like 20% higher when LeBron isn't on the court. And so, you know, that's a little concerning, but it was so bad, and LeBron being there is so exciting, that it's like, you know, you're throwing a party and somebody walks in and wants to talk politics. Like, the response to that's going to be a lot more egregious or volatile if the party is that much more fun. And I think that's where we currently sit. The spacing thing that you raised, I think a lot of why the Lakers shooting rate, the rate at which they're shooting the threes and the number of threes that they've shot is so low, is because they've spent like no time in the half court. Like, they've just gotten out and run. And what I don't think the Lakers have figured out quite yet is how to run into 3-pointers. It's pretty much you just run and somebody's going to attempt something either at or close to the rim. And if it doesn't go in, then you just kind of get back on defense. The Lakers need to learn how to run into transition threes, but until they do that, then yeah, they risk being an inefficient team. Like, even when they're playing at their best right now, it feels like they should be on a run, but you look up and the team that they're playing against, because they've gone down and hit a few threes, is either with or ahead of them. So that's definitely a concern. I want the roster construction, though, that's terrifying. Like, the backup big thing is legitimately concerning. I find myself nervous watching JaVale McGee play, and in 2018, I don't think that's where we should be.
Yeah, and I want to applaud you, not to come on your podcast and compliment you, but I do want to applaud you for being the rare Laker fan that is willing to look at JaVale in more of a realistic sense. Like, him blocking shots is it's not necessarily good defense, mm-hmm. because he winds up over chasing. And this is how he was in Denver. We've never seen a good JaVale outside of his 2 years with Golden State. We've never seen it. I covered him in Denver, and there was a reason why on a roster with Kostas Koufos, Timofey Mozgov, and JaVale, JaVale wound up being third in the rotation and not playing on some nights. Mm-hmm. It's because you could count on Koufos and Mozgov to make the solid rotation while keeping an eye on the backside. Like, all right, I'm going to show here, but I know I got to be able to get back. And JaVale would just swing wildly. That guard drives the baseline, and he's like ready to block you into oblivion. But if that guard pump fakes and does the drop-off pass, nobody's there. Because JaVale's 10 feet in the air trying to swat air.
Mm-hmm. Well, and even beyond that, with the way that he's like the way that he attempts to block everything, puts his body in spots that like really make me nervous. He does a lot of jumping and yep. like severe jumping in a lot of cluster. And look, if he twists an ankle and misses like a week or two, and the Lakers have to rely heavily on like starting center Ivica Zubac, that's not going to end well. And you and I both know, I saw in your win total over under thing that you had, I think it was 3 Western Conference teams at 48 wins.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. That the Lakers can't have JaVale McGee miss 2 weeks, which like that sentence right there should make people a little nervous.
I think one other thing I think to consider, it's been interesting. The Celtics in 2015-16 had a top 5 defense and a bottom 15 offense. Mm-hmm. In 16-17, they had a top 5 offense and a bottom 15 defense. In 17-18, they had the number one defense, and for much of the season, they were 20th or worse in offense. So my point here is there were lots of changes to the roster from 16-17 to 17-18, but there were still components that were the same. And for there to be as much of a shift that dramatically, I still haven't gotten an answer for why that is, and we see it consistently. I bring this up for the Lakers context because of this. Because of who they were last year, and we do this all the time as analysts and fans, we tend to believe that things of a team's identity are going to carry over year to year. You were good this last year, so we don't have to worry about it. It'll be good this year. You have to build a consistency in that area in order to really for it to be good. Like that takes several seasons to build that consistency. Zach Lowe was the first one to kind of like I've been worried about it because I didn't really buy into the Lakers defense last year. I was like, there's just no reason why a roster that looks like this should be this good defensively. They are. Like they just are. The numbers are what they are. Like they are allowing what they are allowing. But that doesn't make a whole lot of sense. Lowe's been really worried about the defense. Like that's been mentioned. And when you look at the roster, that's part of why Rondo, Lance, JaVale, those are 3 real concerns. Mm-hmm. Rondo in the playoffs, awesome defender. Rondo in the regular season could not care less. And that's going to be an issue going forward. So the problem is, if one of the ideas this summer was, well, look, okay, we know they're going to be good at defense. They were good at defense last year. They added more playmakers. They could figure out some spacing. They can get the offense better with LeBron, and they'll be good to go. Well, now it looks like, okay, what if the defense isn't as good as it was last year? What if that's because of the roster changes and just like it's hard, like I said, it's hard. You know, part of it's like they lost good defenders. They lost Brooke Lopez and Julius Randle, who Randle made huge strides last year. Mm-hmm. They lost quality defenders from last year's team. If they're not as good this year as they were last year defensively, and they're only middle of the road offensively, what does that team look like? Like, does a team win 45 plus wins in the Western Conference with an average offense and an average defense, even if that offense is like getting up to like 14, 13, maybe even 12, how good does the offense have to be to cancel out the maybe slip defensively for what we're going to see? And if you're not great, this is one of the really things I don't know. I don't know what they're going to be great at. because you look at, you know, preseason's preseason, and we all know it's useless in almost every regard. There are things to look to take away from it in terms of individual performance. I think Ingram's shot percentage being so much up from previous preseasons, that's a big deal. Like that's a sign that he's actually going to be where he needs to be as a shooter, which is huge. Mm-hmm. But like, I just don't know. They were really great at drawing fouls, and they were really great at pushing the pace. Is that the identity? Is like, are they a transition team that gets you in foul trouble?
Yeah,
because is that a identity that's going to carry you throughout the regular season? And this is all skeptical talk, because I can flip it back the other way, which is like, what are they going to be bad at? Like, what did they actually show that they were going to be definably bad at? The defense had rough stretches, yes, but they weren't the Bulls. They weren't, you know, the Suns. Like, there's no reason to believe that this is going to be a bottom 10 defense. So that's really kind of the question. Maybe that's where we kind of need to start, is the Lakers are starting kind of an equilibrium of almost like middle level for the league, and where they go from there is going to be based off of internal production and what LeBron that we get. And maybe that's the best way to look at it.
Yeah. The defense is something I want to talk a little bit more about. So let's take a couple quick seconds here, and then we'll come back and we'll talk about the defense. Today's show is brought to you also in part by Mizuma USA. Mizuma USA has been, they have just been incredible with us, not just in terms of the partnership and the amount of communication and support that they've given us in supporting the show, but also with me personally. They have helped with all of the finances that have to do with the show. They have helped with taxes and all those things, and really what it allows me to do is focus on this show, which is my passion. And for those of you who have small businesses and your own personal small business, that's really what it's about, right? You want to get back to the reason that you went into that business in the first place. So Mizuma is going to help you do that, starting at only $75 a month. They'll manage, they have CPAs, bookkeepers, and accountants that you can talk to at any time. They're incredible with communicating with you. So I'm going to give you a number. Call 213-947-6926. Again, that's 213-947-6926, and it'll set up a free consultation. They can figure out what's best for you and your business. So again, that's 213-947-6926. Mizuma, your small business's one-stop shop for bookkeeping, taxes, and unlimited accounting advice. I think the thinking with what the Lakers were hoping to get out of their defense was they would be so much longer at all the other positions that it would make up for the lack of interior length when JaVale isn't on the court. And in theory, like, that sounds interesting, at least in theory. But what we've learned in the modern era of basketball is that you need somebody who can defend the rim and at least box out. That's all that Brook Lopez did for the Lakers last year defensively. It was, he challenged a lot of shots, and then he did a ton of blocking out so that the guys who were on the court with him could board and go, or he was really good at tipping it to guys who can catch that tip and go. JaVale doesn't do those things, and he doesn't. If he does challenge things, that's how we talked about earlier, he does it more from a standpoint of the stat. He looks for the stat of the block, and then he looks for the stat of the rebound. But those aren't necessarily the things that the Lakers need out of that spot. And then when he isn't on the court, like, Michael Beasley has been okay, but I don't know if I want to rely on Michael Beasley's defense and say that that's something that I'm relying on. And Zubats has not been good. I'm not positive that he's an NBA player. So, like, there are going to be large stretches of games where I'm not really comfortable with probably the most important position on defense. And I don't know if the Lakers have good enough perimeter defense. They have long enough perimeter defenders, maybe, but I don't know if they have good enough perimeter defenders to make up for that. Like, that's how I would look at their concerns on the defensive end.
Yeah, I think maybe the good news with JaVale is this, is that when he struggled in Washington and Denver, one of the problems was that they had no perimeter contain. Like, they had spots all over the floor, whether it was...
It was the Roy Hibbert thing that when he was on the Lakers and everybody was just driving at him constantly.
Yeah, and so, like, you know, in Denver, like, because I don't remember the random people that were in Washington... you know, like Ty Lawson, Corey Brewer, mm-hmm. Et cetera. Like, those guys, couldn't contain at all. And I think if you look on the Lakers, there's not a guy really on the Lakers that I look at and go, I'm really worried about their ability to contain outside of Lance, like Rondo off the catch maybe. But Lance, I kind of have a little bit of faith and hope that film will do a lot for that. That basically Lance doesn't want to get embarrassed by, like, doesn't want to be embarrassed in film with LeBron there, because he has so much respect for him that will wind up keeping him honest.
Well, there's also a really easy path to where he just leaves the rotation altogether. And I don't think he wants to go down that path.
Right. So the rest of the guys, Lonzo at this point, you have to believe because of his metrics and everything else that he's going to be great. In terms of contain, he's long, right?
Mm-hmm.
He's laterally not the quickest, but that doesn't really matter as long as he's just, like, because he's super aware, so we can anticipate. Hart, obviously, really, like, shows really great promise as a defender. Ingram, same kind of deal. Maybe Kuzma, but then you're talking about bigger guys that you're not as worried about driving. So, like, there's all the – maybe if you get Kuzma on a switch, then that's a problem. But we're talking about very specific situations here. So, maybe that's the thing is that JaVale can just chase the block because so few of those guys have low awareness and contain abilities to where that's going to help them kind of boost it up, because, there's – some pretty good signs based off of, again, the preseason numbers, but like there's some pretty good signs there in the data that there's indications that could work. So, maybe these things are overblown. This is the thing is it's not, it seems on the surface like, well, they haven't played together, so we don't know what they look like. That's obvious. And I agree, except that usually if you could tell me that new guys are going to come together, I'd be able to give you a pretty solid sense of what they're going to look like. And this Lakers team, I just do not have a sense for it. There are so many, and part of it is a lot of their guys are either so young we don't have a big enough sample size for, and the veterans have such wide discrepancies in their performance year to year. Like Dallas Rondo was horrible, and Sacramento mm-hmm. Rondo was okay. And then New Orleans Rondo was really good. So it's like there's just this wide range of performance all over. And the other thing we really don't know about is Luke hasn't been here. And you could say, like, I'm not talking about hasn't been here in terms of, like, competing for a title. I'm talking about we haven't seen Luke Walton in a head coaching capacity having to make the call between playing rookies and not rookies, young dudes over veterans, which is a really hard spot for NBA coaches to be in. And then much of that's going to depend on what LeBron says. The trick there is that LeBron is way more passive aggressive, I think, than people realize with a lot of this stuff, because he knows he has to be careful about how much influence he exerts, because he'll get labeled as running the organization and doing too much. And like, it's not about you, it's about the team. Like, he has a really tough road to walk, but he also winds up being like, look, I got a lot on my plate. I can't do all this. I'm a player. Like, I have to play. I'm a father of three kids, and I have obviously a million things with Spring Hill Entertainment. So there's like a lot to do. And so he has to be able to give Luke the input on, all right, yeah, let's get Brandon more minutes, or versus, like, put Lance on the bench, or I want to see more Alonzo. But those are also hard decisions to make because of how veterans and young guys work, and there's established histories. And LeBron learned that throughout his career as well as those older guys did. This all is really complicated. It's not very simple. It's not – most people tend to think that, like, well, the young guys will play because they're better. And it's like, that's possible. They are better. I agree. But if you told me, like, do the better guys always play in the NBA? No, that is not how it works. Yeah. That's why we have so many conversations about why won't X coach play this guy? Because there are really complicated issues at hand that go, honestly, well beyond player dynamics. And that's where you get into, you don't want to make that guy's agent mad. So this stuff gets real complicated in a hurry once you start throwing the big picture into it.
Yeah, well, and I would add to that Luke is not a Magic Johnson hire. He's not a LeBron hire either. And like Lance Stephenson is a LeBron signing, and JaVale McGee is a Magic Johnson signing. And so Luke is going, and like Brandon Ingram is not a Magic Johnson or a Luke Walton guy, right? So Brandon Ingram's going to have to show out that much more to so that he can, you know, the people who are above Luke, even LeBron in this case, can kind of recognize and say, okay, yeah, that guy needs minutes. And you know, we'll see if that actually comes to fruition. So that's going to do it for part one of this conversation between Matt and I. Stay tuned for part two of this conversation, in which Matt and I get into some of why we actually think the Lakers are going to work out. Some of it is concrete. Some of it is a little less tangible. It's a really fun, interesting conversation, and he actually buys into some Lakers exceptionalism, so that's kind of fun. So again, stay tuned for that in part two. That'll air tomorrow or I guess later tonight at 9 p.m. Have a good one.